Thank you for joining us today for the Conform to Christ podcast, where we seek to engage the mind, affect the heart, and call people to follow Christ. My name is George Mays. I'm here with Jay Jones, and this is Free for All Friday.
Good morning.
Good morning. Should have grabbed something to eat before we
started recording. Hey, somebody brought in some brownies. You want one? Let me go grab you one?
No.
They're homemade.
That's okay. No, no one needs to see me snacking on brownies while we're talking.
No, they won't care. I got snack packs. I got snack packs.
You got
there.
Some snack packs?
Yeah. You can get a spoon and eat your snack pack.
Yep. I thought you were gonna bring in a pizza today. You had my hopes up.
Oh, you wanted one? I did, but I ate it already. Yeah. I had a Casey's breakfast pizza.
Yeah, what's on that?
This one was cheese and green bell peppers. I think maybe a little sausage. It's whatever's available in there.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly good. I've told you before.
For it being gas station.
I was like, nah, because I'd heard it's good.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's like a legit pizza chain.
Okay. Do they make the pizza there in the gas station?
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess I'll just have to take your word for it.
You want me to bring you one in next time so you can eat it on air?
That's
like your sushi? People
I've had
like
pizza
that.
Before. It's not, it wouldn't be as,
Have you had sushi fun. Since that time?
I have.
Brought it in? Yeah.
I have.
You starting to like it a little bit?
Yeah, it's
maybe
pretty good.
Growing on you?
Got the guy over there at Homeland making it fresh every day.
Yep.
You wouldn't think going to Homeland that you would get good sushi, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, I go into Homeland, I see a white guy making sushi, I'm leaving, right? But if he is of the tradition of those who make sushi, let's say, and he's hand-making it fresh right there, then I'll give it a shot. And it's actually really good.
Yeah.
But it makes you wonder, though. Do you ever wonder, like, we're in the middle of Oklahoma, what's the logistics here?
Yeah, I don't know.
What's the logistics to get this fresh here?
How fresh is the fish?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
That always worries me just a little bit.
A little bit.
Yep. Yeah.
This segment of the podcast brought to you by Homeland.
Yeah.
Homeland Sushi and Casey's gas station pizza. This past week was ShepCon.
Yeah.
ShepherdCon. Mm-hmm. Shepherd's Conference at Grace Community Church, MacArthur's Church. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the shakeup with Alistair Begg. He was asked not to come, and he agreed it probably wouldn't be good, probably be a distraction. Interesting. John Piper was there again. It's been a few years, hasn't it?
Yeah, been a while.
It's been a while. It may be a few more years.
Maybe a few more.
after what he said in he preached a couple of times. I think he preached twice.
Okay.
And in his second one, he said something a little interesting. I thought that we could play it. It's a 46 second clip. Thought we could play it and maybe talk about it. then we can get into our
I'm main. Aware of the controversy. I haven't watched this though.
Okay.
I don't know. So I don't even know exactly what he said.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, let's you want to turn the volume up and put it on the screen. This is John Piper at ShepCon.
What are we after in our people's lives? And everybody said, obedience. So did I. Amen. But you had already quoted, if you love me, you will obey me. So I'm thinking, I'm after love, folks. And you are too. And because that love is not equal to obedience, and that love is not equal to agape. That love is erotic to the core. That's an overstatement. Eros means I find pleasure in you, Jesus. I find pleasure in you, Jesus. You are my preciousness. And there comes obedience.
Ah. All right. Okay, so...
He got a little carried away with himself, it looked like.
He did get...
He said, that's an overstatement.
Yeah. Christianity is erotic to the core. Yeah. He did walk it back. He said, that's an overstatement, but... it already gone out. I wish the camera, because the camera started with, you could see MacArthur and Steve Lawson down there. I wish it would have stayed there.
Yeah.
So we could have saw their expressions when he said that. I sent that clip to you, and you sent back, he went full hedonism.
He did. He went full hedonism. You never go full hedonism. Well, that's hedonism. That's kind of his ministry. That's his whole... Yeah. 40, 50 years of ministry, that's kind of the center of it.
Yeah.
Right. Is that we should take pleasure in God. Mm-hmm. And it is true, we should. Right?
Yeah.
If Jesus is who we profess to say he is, then he ought to take great pleasure in him. Mm-hmm.
And I think what he was saying was correct. Yeah. The goal is not... And we have to. It's more than just sound bites. You have to get more than sound bites. We're not after obedience. We're after love, because love leads to obedience.
Right.
But without the love, the obedience isn't what God is after.
Right.
We've been talking about this in Malachi. What's the goal? The goal is worship.
Yeah.
We worship what we love. But to say it's erotic to the core, yeah, that is an overstatement.
Yeah, you'd have to definitely qualify that several times in our culture to kind of get at what he says. He caught himself so quickly, though.
He did.
Yeah, he was probably having several thoughts in his head as he said it.
Yeah,
and he was probably like, "Oh, that's an overstatement." He got a little excited.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Yeah. But people have been. I haven't been following it, but I've seen like so many people just going on crazy with this.
Oh yeah.
Like articles being written, blah blah blah, whatever. But I mean, he did say I overstated it.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, how many of us have said stupid things from the pulpit? Yeah. It's Piper. I mean.
One guy did like a whole analysis of every time the word love is used in the New Testament. He's like, never erotic.
It's never eros. It's eros. Agape. Yeah, yeah. It's agape or phileo.
Yeah.
You know.
People make too much of those words, though. Mm. They'll create like whole studies on like individual words. Mm. And then, but if you read through John, those words for love, they're used interchangeably.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you want to be careful with your definition of agape. Like, this is godly love,
right?
Until you read the Septuagint and you go back to Amnon and Tamar, he agapes her and then he rapes her. So you got to be careful. It's a strong love.
Yeah,
but you want to make sure you're defining the terms correctly. Yeah. So.
Well, that would play right in with those rabid anti-Calvinists' objections to Calvinism, huh?
Oh yeah.
Wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The things they say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see that James White debated Leighton Flowers again?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that one person. He summarized it as the Romans 9 debate 2.0.
Uh huh. Yeah. I didn't watch it, but I heard it was the same thing that. It was on John chapter 6.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe narrowly focused on verse 44. That no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him. Mm-hmm. And James White is trying to exegete the text, and Leighton Flowers is over here, you know.
Here, there, and everywhere.
Given some crazy analogy. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know why he debated him a second time, but I think I saw him tweet that he never will do it again. Like, he hopes that someone will like slap him if he ever considers doing a debate against Leighton Flowers ever again.
I saw someone subtweet it. He said, "For textual coherence, it goes to white. Mm-hmm. No, for textual fidelity, it goes to white. Mm-hmm. For theological coherence, it goes to flowers. I'm like, can you not see the ridiculousness of this tweet? How can you have a coherent theology that doesn't strictly adhere to the text? Mm-hmm. You make no sense. This is why I don't engage on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's just pointless.
Well, all right. We are continuing our series on misused and abused Bible verses.
Yeah.
And today we're going to look at one that I think people get this a little bit better, but it still gets misused. And I've got a couple of clips here.
So yeah.
We can see it being misused. But what are we doing today, Jay?
Matthew 18. Where is it?
Did you lose it already?
Yeah, I did. 20. Yeah, for sure. Where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am among them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think most people have heard somebody quote this.
Oh, probably. Yeah. Usually at a poorly attended prayer meeting. To encourage people. Well, there's not many of us here, but like it says, where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them.
Yeah.
So as long as there's two of us, Jesus is here.
Mm-hmm.
Which raises the question, if there's only one, is Jesus not there? Does he not hear our prayers when we're by ourselves?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about it, but I've got a couple of clips of people talking about this. The first one is from the 700 Club. You a fan of the 700 Club?
I remember the 700 Club.
They have a Q&A section. Is Pat Robertson still alive? Is he still alive?
I don't know.
He's pretty old in this clip. He's looking pretty old. I
remember him selling those Y2K survival kits, though.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
I don't remember him doing it, but...
I don't think my kids even know what Y2K is.
Yeah.
Probably need to have a conversation with them about it. That'd make a good combo. Y2K.
Yeah.
Survival kits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The moons are aligning.
You could go out to Branson and you could get the Jim Baker...
Yeah.
Tubs of slop.
Tubs of slop.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just go to YouTube and look up Jim Baker survival.
I'm just curious, if someone would write an article, how do you go from kind of his ministry focus and then you get into survival?
Well, you go to prison.
It'll change a man.
You go to prison, yeah. Yeah. There's a definite logical progression.
Yeah, we sell it.
There's being married to Tammy Faye.
Yeah.
Then going to prison.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he have like a theme park for a while?
I know it was planned. I don't know if they actually built it or not. I don't know. I'm not an expert in all things Jim Baker. Uh-huh. I know that they were planning on some kind of theme park, but they're in Branson. They're in Branson, and they do like a talk show.
Yeah,
but he's constantly peddling his survival.
Yeah, he watched
tubs of food.
He got hooked.
I use the word food very. Very loosely.
He got hooked on watching The Walking Dead in prison.
Probably, yeah.
Came out and was like, I got to sell survival
food. That's right.
that's what the church needs.
How did we get here? Well, we're talking about the 700 Club.
It's free for all, right?
It is. So Pat Robertson, they did a Q&A, and it's about where two or three are gathered in my name. It's a little sad, but... It does serve as a good example. We'll watch this one, and then we'll watch Mike Pence. let's watch this one first.
All right.
All right, here we go.
Ooh, nice little sound effects.
Mm-hmm. This is Larry, who says, Jesus says, if any two agree, ask, and it will be granted. Where two or three are gathered in my name, there I will be also. I'm shut in on oxygen 24/7 and watch CBN. Only one person ever comes around, and that's when I call needing groceries. Even then, this person only delivers and then leaves. My question is, do the hosts on TV count as the two or three gathered in his name, or do people need to be physically gathered together?
I think they can be spiritually gathered together. I don't think they have to be physically. In the old days,
it I'm really trying to hold a laugh.
They didn't have television.
Because the poor guy, the poor guy is alone. But
Jay's having a hard time keeping it together over here.
The poor man. Oh,
so, it's this is serious. This is serious, Jay.
All right. Oh goodness.
Serious.
Okay. All right. You can get did you?
You can see the pastoral implications though, right?
Oh man.
Of getting this passage wrong because you've got a homebound guy and he's wondering is Jesus here? Like he's asking this question, and I mean it's funny because he asked, I watch CBN. Do the TV hosts count as the two or three? Which shows a major lack of understanding in the verse. But Pat Robertson, he doesn't help the guy. So here's his answer.
Actually gathered together. I don't think they have to be physically. In the old days, it had to be physical, but. They didn't have television, they didn't have satellites, they didn't have all this other. So we kind of had a large group of prayer together, and you could be in another country. So I don't think they have to be in the same room with you, and we'd be delighted to have you part of the fellowship, and we're praying together, especially if you have an infirmity, you can't go to church, all right?
All right, so there's his answer that doesn't have to be physically present. It can be spiritually present. Now it used to have to be physical.
Yeah, but now you can meet in the metaverse.
That's right.
Where two or three are gathered in the metaverse with their avatars.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Yeah. There he is.
Yes.
In the metaverse.
Yeah, but again, it raises that question. Well, what if I'm alone? I mean, that's the concern that this homebound individual has. I'm alone. Hmm. Is Jesus in the midst? Can the TV host count as those two or three? So there, I mean, it's a distasteful. Jay, you laughing?
Yeah, I couldn't help it. I tried to not laugh. I tried my best.
Yeah, but. There's a common misunderstanding of the verse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here's Mike Pence, CBN again. CBN's got all Mike the good Pence. Stuff. He's got all the good stuff. I don't know if this is, this seems like, it looks like the same guy that was interviewing him. That's not a good picture, but it looks like the same guy that interviewed him about the Jeremiah 29:11.
Mike Pence, he might be like the poster boy for...
misuse versus
well,
he's a politician.
Yeah,
like he's a politician. I mean, it was a really short clip, not worth showing. But Ted Cruz did the same thing. Mm-hmm. He used Matthew 18:20 the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a longer clip. That's almost 2.5 minutes. And this is at the beginning of the COVID shutdowns.
Mm.
And I noticed on Facebook. This was right around the time that we shut down for COVID, but that's the context. Mm-hmm. This is probably late February, early March of 2020, and his answer is in response to what about churches that can't meet because of COVID?
Okay,
so here we go.
The faith community, they by and large have been obeying these guidelines. I do want to address some of those rogue pastors, if you will, that are still holding services. And I know that's the minority of pastors, but there are some who claim religious freedom, all of that. What do you say? What's your message to those that are still holding services in the pews?
Well, I would have a message to faith communities across the country. And first and foremost, it would be a word of gratitude. I mean, our churches and synagogues and communities of faith across America have risen to the challenge. You know, I talked to my mom this morning, and she had a neighbor who was bringing over some fresh groceries. I mean, it would be impossible to fully describe what faith communities, even during a time of social distancing and not being able to meet, have still been putting hands and feet on their faith. And it's one of the reasons why the president and I have took efforts to remind every American, as I do so again, that even if you're not in the pew on Sunday, that ministry is still going on. And so to the extent that you're able to continue to contribute to your local church, your local synagogue, your ministry, we encourage you to do that, because those communities of faith are making such an immense difference. And we are also grateful that I think most communities of faith around the country have heeded the president's coronavirus guidelines for America and avoided gatherings of more than 10. And to those who would, as we go into this very precious Easter weekend, who might think otherwise, I would just remind, as a brother in Christ, that, you know, where two or more are gathered, there he is also. Mm-hmm. And this weekend, my wife and I will gather in the living room at the vice president's residence. We'll watch our home church, College Park, in Indiana. And then after that, we're going to have a Skype Easter brunch with our kids around the country. We're all making do, but we can still worship, we can still practice our faith, and practice the really important social distancing that at this time in the life of our nation is just so.
There you go.
Looking back, like the completely arbitrary numbers that were just made up.
Oh yeah,
like 10. Mm-hmm. Where'd that come from? Right. Nowhere.
Right. Yeah.
10 or more. Mm-hmm. No more than 10.
Yeah. But you can take comfort, even though you have to social distance. That you can still worship because where two or more are gathered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My question is, as I was listening to this after the 700 Club one, was it Mike Pence's mother that was that was homebound watching 700 Club? Person delivering.
You never know.
Delivering the groceries.
You never know.
And then his, we're going to you can see like the fake excitement. We're going to have a Skype lunch with the kids.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a blast.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Eating with the laptop right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm sure that's a lot of fun. So.
Yep.
But there you go. Misuses of where two or more are gathered. Mm. There he is.
Yeah.
That's not a good excuse to not meet as a church. Because if that's the interpretation, if Mike Pence's interpretation is right, then why go to church at all? Why not just worship with your family? And that's legitimate, because where two or more are gathered, there's Jesus. So
right.
Corporate worship is not it's not that important.
Yeah. So obviously we have to go to Matthew and read a little more than those few verses.
Right.
The context really begins in verse 15. But before you even get to the context, I think, you know, something like, what would you say to somebody who's homebound or whatever, right? Like, what should he have said? What would I say to someone? I would just take someone to Psalm 139, 7 through 10.
Yeah.
And to understand God, who he is, in his essence. Mm-hmm. You can't ever get away from God. So if you're completely alone, you know, maybe you're a prisoner of war and you're the only Christian within 500 miles, locked in a cell, he's there with you.
Yeah. Well, also, Jesus' promises in John 15, 16, 17, that the Godhead, the triune Godhead, makes their home.
Yeah.
Makes his home in the believer.
Right.
So he's with us. And the promise of the Great Commission is that he's with us always, even to the end of the age. So you're not alone.
Right.
But for someone that's homebound, I mean, this again is the this doesn't minimize the importance of the local church. It actually elevates it. The importance of the local church is that the local church reach out and minister to those people who are homebound.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do a better job of making sure that those who are sick, who have chronic illnesses, like they're not forgotten.
Right.
And we can do that in a variety of ways. Visiting them, sending them cards, calling them. We have a variety of different ways that we can make sure that we, even a text message nowadays, you know, you can send a text message to people and just let them know that you're thinking about them, that you're praying for them. So it's, I know myself, in the past, I haven't done a great job. I mean, Northwest was filled with homebound people, and I wasn't always the best at reaching out to them, but we need to do a good job. The local church needs to do a good job.
Yeah, I mean, you can't bear all the weight. I mean, the church exists to do ministry,
right?
The people of the church. So that can't all fall on pastor's shoulders to do that.
But the local church can still minister to homebound people, even if they can't actually come to the corporate worship weekly. They're still part of the church. They're still part of the body, and we can still encourage them. But
and you can get them a VR headset. meet them.
It's like they're it's like
meet them in the metaverse.
Like they're actually there. Yep. Yeah. But getting to the passage itself, understanding what's going on in the passage, the verse 20 is about more than just Christians getting together and having that assurance that Jesus is there, because Jesus is wherever a Christian is.
Yeah.
But the verse still has an encouraging effect, and that's what it's meant. That's what it's meant to do. It's meant to encourage us, but it's meant to encourage us in a specific area.
Right. Yeah. And that area, you can take the broader context and see there's the parable of the lost sheep, just going after, you know, one who is leaving the 99 and going to pursue the one who has gone astray. Mm. And that leads into his teaching on what we call church discipline, or what people have called historically church discipline, going after a lost sheep. How do you go after a lost sheep?
Right.
One that has gone astray. And then also the parable of the unforgiving servant.
Mm-hmm.
That one is really given to those who might be, I think, those who are going after the sheep. Like, what should their attitude be towards someone who's in sin? And your willingness to freely forgive people, how, as you have been forgiven, that kind of sandwiches the broader context.
Right.
And then, of course, you can just, you know, we can just read. Maybe you could read it for us, since you have the better reading voice. 15, starting in verse 15, and you can really get the context just by reading a few more verses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the context is really easy to see.
Yeah.
Okay, so Matthew chapter 18, beginning in verse 15, it says, "If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again I say to you, if two of you agree on earth about anything they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I among them."
Yeah, there it is. That really kind of makes it obvious.
Right.
It's in the context of church discipline, pursuing someone who has gone astray in their sin. We did an entire podcast on this, I believe, a couple years ago.
We did, yeah, on church discipline.
So if you want that, a long podcast about that, you can go back and scroll through our Free For All Fridays. You'll find it in there where we talk about it in pretty great detail, I think. But yeah, we see here, I think, clearly that, and if you've never really engaged in church discipline, maybe you don't get why this verse is important, because to to try to follow this as Jesus has laid it out can be a, for the person trying to obey him and to pursue someone, that can be a very stressful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can be very stressful. It can cause a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
People are, I think, by nature in the church, non-confrontational yeah. toward each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be very intimidating, especially if you get all the way to the last, this last step and people still aren't responding.
Right.
And so you can wonder, like you can doubt, did we do this right? Did we not, did we not say the right things? Did we not say enough? Did we not handle this with enough care? And now the church is, you know, meeting together to maybe put someone out of the church who's unrepentant, still living in sin. And the church can even wonder, are we really doing the right thing here?
Yeah.
But Jesus gives the comfort that he's with us when two or three are gathered in the in this context.
Right.
He is there with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think shows that he is not just with us, but he approves of what's being done, if it's done according to what he's laid out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a very deliberate, I think even slow process that takes place. That when a Christian in the local church sins against someone else in the local church, the person who is offended goes to the offender and addresses the issue.
Yeah.
And it's very specific between you and him alone.
Mm-hmm.
Like not gossiping, not disguising it as a prayer request. I've seen that happen before.
Yeah.
You keep the circle tight.
As small as possible.
As small as possible. Yeah. If an individual sins against you in some way, the circle needs to remain for the moment between you and that person,
right?
And don't expand it prematurely. You go to that person alone and address the issue, and the hope is that between two Christians, two brothers or two sisters or however it plays out, those two will be reconciled to each other,
right?
That you'll win your brother.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes that doesn't happen.
Right.
Sometimes the person that, there could even be misunderstandings. People get offended by mistake all the time. So if maybe they can't come to that reconciliation, that they can't come to that agreement, then you expand the circle a little bit and you bring two or three more people with you.
Yeah.
So that every judgment has two or three witnesses.
Right.
In accordance with the Old Testament law. That it will be established by two or three witnesses. Again, you're keeping the circle pretty small.
Yeah.
We're talking like four or five people within the local church.
Right.
And maybe with some other people to help, then there can be reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that doesn't work either.
Right.
And we witness that ourselves. Sometimes it doesn't work. And so then if it still is ongoing, then you take it to the church. And I think that means you take it to the elders.
Mm.
Like you don't just start blasting the person on social media or going around gossiping. I think you take it to the leadership first. And then as the leadership is thinking through the issue, probably reaching out to the person themselves, then if all else fails, then the leadership will take it to the church and present the issue to the church, and the church gets involved. So now the circle has been expanded to the entire local church.
Right. So then,
and this isn't something that you don't just hammer this through. Like, I think that this takes time because maybe it's not that, maybe it's not that big a deal. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it was, you know, an offhanded comment that you took the wrong way or, you know, maybe they meant it, but you know, I'm going to show grace anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, like not every issue is, take it to the church level.
Right.
Right. So yeah. I think again, time, patience, grace, I think all that goes into this.
Right. Yeah. And then the church, which now would be hopefully a lot of people that know the person, mm-hmm. it really doesn't have the same effect maybe if the person isn't personally known. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Right.
You know, maybe if you're in a mega church, you may not even know 90% of the people there.
Yeah.
But hopefully you would know a lot. And so a lot of the people that you do know who have some involvement in your life, now there's more of them mm-hmm. reaching out to you with the goal of not being punishment, but reconciliation.
Reconciliation, yeah. This is supposed to be restorative.
Right.
You've won your brother. That's right. The goal. The mm-hmm. goal is to win the brother. It's yeah. not to kick out people that we disagree with. It's come back.
Yeah.
And you would hope that a true believer, someone that actually is believing the gospel, that understands the depths of their own sin and the grace and love of God that He's given us in Christ, that if you have a group of Christians coming in and talking to you about this, you would hope that they would say, "Yeah, I was wrong, and so I asked for forgiveness, and
yeah,
and I want to make this right."
And then the parable of the unforgiving servant comes in because if somebody does, even if it's a public shameful sin, well, how do you respond?
Right.
And we should forgive as we've been forgiven, which right. means fully.
Yeah, you've got this parable where this servant is this king is calling all debts mm-hmm. to account, and the servant comes, and he owes 10,000 talents. One commentator, I think it was R.T. France, in his Matthew commentary, he said this would be the equivalent of like a gazillion dollars.
Like a gazillion,
like it's unpayable.
But yeah,
like mm-hmm. you would have to live multiple lifetimes. to get this is like 1,000 years worth of debt, and the servant says, "I'll give me time, I'll pay it back," which is ridiculous, right? Because you can't repay a gazillion dollars, and the king, in mercy, he, out of pity, it says in verse 27, out of pity for him, the master forgives him.
Mm-hmm.
this is. Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That the king would do this. This servant goes away, and can you even imagine the relief?
Right.
He goes away. He finds a fellow servant who owes him 100 denarii. A denarii was a day's worth of labor. So 100 denarii is like over three months of wages. Not a small debt, but compared to a gazillion dollars, it's not even a drop in the bucket. And this servant who's been forgiven a gazillion dollars, he takes this servant that owes him 100 denarii and starts choking him. Mm. Pay me what you owe.
Yeah.
The other servants are dismayed by this, and they go tell the king, and the king calls the servant to him and says, "Didn't I forgive you this great debt? Shouldn't you have forgiven your fellow servant? Like this isn't even the relationship isn't even the same. I'm the king, and I forgive you this gigantic debt that I am owed. I deserve this. You're with another slave, and you won't forgive the debt, the smaller debt." And so he throws the unforgiving servant in prison, hands them over to literally the torturers until he'll pay, until you won't get out until you pay everything. Well, again, this guy owes a gazillion dollars, so
Right.
He's never getting out. Right. And the whole purpose, the whole lesson of the parable is if you truly have received the forgiveness from the king, if you truly understand the grace has been shown to you, then you will be more willing to forgive fellow sinners mm-hmm. who sinned against you.
Right.
But if you do not forgive others their debts against you, then it just goes to show that you've never actually experienced the forgiveness from the king.
Yeah. I think this is one of the most observable things or marks of a Christian that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
So someone is born again. They may struggle with a lot of sins because they have developed, like say they convert as an adult, patterns, right? But once you have experienced forgiveness yourself, it's my experience anyway, that this is one of the big signs of a Christian, is that they themselves are forgiving and will forgive. I want to use the word easily. I don't know if that's the right word. Quickly, without hesitation, without reservation.
I don't know if it's... Because, I mean, again, that's why I wanted to point out, like, 100 denarii, it's not a small sum.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to forgive that is going to cost him something.
Mm-hmm.
Forgiveness might cost you something. But in light of what, like, in comparison
mm-hmm.
with what you've been forgiven... Forgiving someone else for some slight should be a no-brainer.
Right.
Right. You should be willing to do it because you know, like, no one is ever going to sin against you anywhere close to how you've sinned against Christ.
Right. Yeah.
And how did God in Christ forgive you?
That's the one to grasp first. Mm-hmm. To have a realistic view of your own sin
mm-hmm.
and what Christ did for you,
right?
We should be like our God, and I think we're made that way. We're made that way by our conversion, by the indwelling of the Spirit. It is not a natural human thing to forgive. I think we can.
Our tendency is to hold it in and to hold grudges.
Mm-hmm.
But the Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 4, he's teaching the Gentiles to put off their sin and to put on the new man, mm-hmm. put off the old man, put on the new man. But in the middle of that is you have to have this renewal of your mind. You mm-hmm. have to have your mind changed. And so he says that you're supposed to let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor, I like how the LSB translates that as shouting, like this angry shouting. The Christian shouldn't be a person that's just constantly griping and shouting at people. And slander should be put away from you. You should put it off, along with all malice. What are you supposed to put on? Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. Well, how do you do it? Your mind has to be changed. And so he says that you're supposed to be kind, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. So when your mind is transformed by the gospel and you recognize what God has done for you, then you should be able to put off bitterness and wrath and slander and shouting and malice and put on kindness and tenderheartedness and forgiveness. Because that's what God did for you.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's not always easy.
Yeah, and the first place you get to kind of exercise this is in the context of a marriage.
Mm.
So if I'm talking to a young couple, maybe they're about to get married or they're brand new married, early 20s, say. A lot of times my wife will be there. And this is kind of one of the big things that we hit on is if you want to have a good marriage, then you have to be people, your home has to be a home where people are forgiven. Mm. Quickly and easily, but you're willing to give it and you're not going to hold grudges.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can adopt that right away at the beginning, you're really laying the foundation for a good, healthy marriage.
Yeah. And forgiveness means I'm not going to hold this against you. I'm not going to talk about it with other people. I'm not going to bring it up in the future. Hmm. Like, well, remember when you did that?
But remember 20 right. years ago?
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't, forgiveness means to let it go. You're not going to hold it against that person, and you're not going to go around and talk about what your wife did. Can you believe what the old ball and chain did? Like, that's not forgiveness. That's holding on to it. And Jesus actually says that you're supposed to do this. If your brother sins against you seven times in the same day and comes to you seven times in the same day and says, "Will you forgive me?" You're supposed to forgive him.
Mm. Yeah.
Because that's what God does.
Right.
And how many times do we sin against God in a day?
Mm-hmm.
But it's more than seven.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And yet he is, he willingly and even joyfully will forgive us because of Christ.
Yeah.
And so we should forgive others. But so going back to Matthew 18:20, it can be difficult to do this, to go through this process of confronting someone, of laying out your grievance. You've sinned against me. And then if they don't listen, bringing more people. And then if they don't listen, going to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't listen to the church, putting them out of the church. That's hard.
Yeah.
We've had to do it a couple of times here, and it's difficult. And so Jesus' words in verse 20, that wherever two or more are gathered in his name, to be obedient to these words, he's in our midst. And so we don't have to, the temptation is to fear man and not do this.
Right.
Which a lot of churches do. They don't practice church discipline. And I've seen sexual immorality and disunity and gossip and anger and all kinds of stuff happen in a church that doesn't practice church discipline. But it's hard to do it.
And spread.
It spreads, yeah. And it actually hurts the church more to not practice church discipline mm-hmm. than to practice it. But it's still hard to do it, especially when if you've never done it before, if your church is trying to be more faithful. To be faithful to the scriptures can be difficult, but Jesus' words are, you don't have to fear man.
Yeah.
Fear me, and I'm in your midst. And so you can know that you can be faithfully obedient to Christ and his word, even in the midst of difficulties, because he's there with us.
Yep. You got it. So. Very good. All right. Thanks for tuning in today for another Free for All Friday on most abused or misused Bible passages. Not sure what we're calling it. It's one of those.
It's like the fifth one, and we don't know what we're calling the series.
Yeah. So hopefully you'll tune back in on Text Driven Tuesday, and we will be back in Malachi talking about divorce. So I'm sure you'll be interested in that, and you'll want to come back. Please give us a like, subscribe, share. Go to the App Store, any of the app stores, and give us a download, and you can find all of the church sermons and podcast in one spot. All right. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Enjoy your Sunday at your local church, worshiping God. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.